I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome to the first bonus edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I don't know what I'm going to coin this yet. I don't know how I'm going to brand this yet. Maybe Chase Thomas Podcast Plus. I'm not sure. But I like things outside of sports, and one of those things that I very much like is binging good horror films on Netflix, and to kind of peruse Fear Street Part 1, Part 2, and Part 3, I have Rosie Fletcher of Den of Geek here. Rosie, thank you so much. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited because I don't know. So I guess we should start with Part 3, where they split it up into two parts. And I was wondering going in, because the trailer didn't really show whether or not they were going to end it back in real time. And real time for this series is 1994. But what did you make of the finale? Like, let's just start there. And folks, we're going to be talking about everything that's happened. So if you've not watched Part 3 yet, wait that out, because there will be spoilers on this podcast. I don't know how you talk about this without talking about the spoilers. So how did you react? Because you saw this a couple days ago. You had the early viewing. So what stood out to you?
Yeah, well, so I've enjoyed the whole series massively. I think they're great. And I think that as a whole, like, the three of them are greater than the sum of their parts, if you know what I mean. So as standalones, they're good. But as a series as a whole, they're excellent. So when I was watching it, as you say, Chase, the trailers didn't make it clear that we were going to be getting like 1994 Part mm-hmm. 2. So when that happened and when you got that title card, I was like, yes, come on. Because it was just a really great moment. Did you find that? Did you get that sense of excitement yourself?
Yes, because I don't know about you, but I didn't see that swerve coming at all. Did you?
You mean
the good family being the actual, like, we realized what was going on with Solomon ended up being a good, but I don't know. I did not see that coming, that Seraphia was actually not a witch at all, and that it was all, she was unfairly treated, and it was all a disastrous witch hunt where, you're not going to believe this, she was not actually a witch, and they were wrong. The townspeople were wrong. The men shouting were wrong, Rosie.
Well, it's a very progressive series, Chase, so I'm actually not that surprised. So I didn't guess the twist at all, but there is no way that set of movies were going to make Seraphia be an actual witch, because the whole thing is about this kind of, you know, the witch hunt of the two girls, you know, who are in a lesbian relationship and how badly they're treated, and also about how the Sunny Vailers are like literally sort of sucking the life out of the shady side. So it's a film about, with a really sort of positive attitude towards diversity and towards class and all those sorts of things. So if it had ended with, and she was a witch, and so they hanged her, that wouldn't have worked at all.
That's
so
true.
It was quite like, but I didn't expect it to be Nick or indeed Solomon. So that was a good twist, if you will. So the thing is about the final part is, obviously, because it's set in 1666 and we know at the end that a young woman is going to be hanged, it's not very funny, unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
Because that's not really a laughing matter, but which was a great move then to cut to part two back in 1994, where it could suddenly be funny again. And it could suddenly have that sort of nostalgia, Stranger Things vibe and that kind of, you know, teenagers overcoming adversity and things like that. So I thought that was quite a good move, so that you didn't end the series with a nasty taste in your mouth. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, they did have somebody else find the book as the credits were rolling. So we don't know who that was. Who do you think swiped it?
Ooh, I don't know. I did speak to the director, Lee Janiak, for an interview a while ago, when I'd seen the first and second one, but not the third. And we were talking about how, you know, you have all these like subsidiary killers that are like given a little bit of, ooh, what could that be? Like Ruby Lane and, you know, Billy Barker. And I was asking, well, could they have their own movies? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to make this into a kind of a MCU style multiverse. So I don't know who it was swiping the book, but I do like the idea of like, okay, so we've got all these historic ones, you know, we've got your Ruby Lanes and your Milkman, but maybe this is a way that it could have like a 2000s vibe, a more contemporary vibe. I mean, I don't know what that would look like. Would it look like an Ari Aster movie? Would it be like incredibly harrowing and just awful? Or, you know, I don't know what 2000s horror or 2020 or 2021 horror is, what the epiphany of that is, but I like the idea that you could have that.
I was very pro blacklight and the neon and the musical choices in part one and part two. I like going back to this time period and like bouncing around. I'm kind of concerned of going to the front. The mall setting and a vibing mall it speaks to me.
Well, I mean, I'm going to guess that I'm a bit older than you, and so I like 90s horror is very much my era. So I went to see Scream at the cinema 3 times. I absolutely loved it. Like, I was completely the right age for that sort of stuff. So the 90s one was like absolutely totally my vibe.
So when the part one came out, you were just like, oh, I'm all the way in, because you get the Scream like killer immediately in the series.
Yeah, and it's got your little nod to The Faculty, which is also a movie that I love, and I Know What You Did Last Summer, and all that kind of sort of slightly postmodern slashes, which I know not everybody loves. I do. So yeah, I was totally on board with that. Whereas the 78 one, while I think it's a good film, it wasn't quite my vibe in the same way, because I just don't love 70s and 80s slashes in the same way as I love 90s ones.
Well, I think also too, what's interesting about that one, because I was thinking about that before we were recording, of like which one I was more, I think I was just more emotionally invested in the characters in part one and then part two of part three than I was the Camp Nightwing characters. I think that's part of the reason I wouldn't place them at the same level, just because I don't know what it was, but like there was something about the young kids and just what they went through in part one that it sunk you in a lot more than I think the kids at camp. Maybe because it was not happening in real time and you knew that they were not the end game and this was like a flashback, and it's harder to buy in all the way in the flashbacks. I mean, the swerve of who Ziggy actually was and how that ends and is great, but I don't think I was as emotionally invested in those characters as the previous one. What about you?
Yeah, I think you're completely right. And I think that's because we already know that they're all going to die, except for Nick Good, who definitely obviously isn't dead, and except for whoever, as you say, C. Berman is. And yeah, the swerve to make her be Ziggy, I mean, Ziggy is obviously a better character than, I can't even remember her, Cindy, that's right. So, you know, I'm glad that Ziggy survives, but you already know that, like, nobody else is going to really. So, I don't know, you're right, you know, that emotional investment isn't quite there. Mm-hmm. I also did really like it, but like, I also had a slight, so like, given that we know that Ziggy is really the only one out of that group that survives, all of that stuff between Cindy and Alice, surely this is the adult Ziggy telling us this story, but she wouldn't know that because she wasn't there. So that was like, that's a little bit of a stretch of the logic, but you know, didn't ruin it. But
so when you're looking through all three of these films, what, like, you've written about the Easter eggs, you've written about some callbacks, and you've spoken about it here a little bit. What were some of your favorite callbacks that Lee used in these three films?
Well, so there are a lot of callbacks to each other, which I appreciated, and it's a quite a clever thing. So, like, I loved when I rewatched, because I've watched the first two twice because I had to write a lot about it. Rewatching the first one and noticing that the kids, when Kate is babysitting two girls basically, and she has to give them somebody else to look after because of the killer, and that's Ruby Lane's mum. But you don't know that at the time, but it adds this extra sort of like level of poignance to it when you understand, you're like, oh, okay. You know, so like, I like those little things. I like the little, like, I mean, there's an Easter egg with Kate in the first one says my mum's sister was at that camp, and from director Lee Janiak, she said that it's the little girl in the sort of creative arts. One of the really shocking kills in 78 actually happens off screen. And it's shocking because we understand as horror fans that you don't kill off the little kids. Like, you kill off the camp counselors, you don't kill off the little kids. And yet Tommy Slater's character comes in, and it's like, you know, it's three preteens, and it's off screen, but you basically see them just being hacked to death, which is kind of funny and kind of awful. But anyway, one of those is supposed to be Kate's aunt, for example. So I thought those were quite sort of nice.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't notice it, and I didn't notice it either. So I specifically asked Lee Janiak about it, because I was saying, like, you know, Kate mentions her aunt was there. Who was it? And she was like, well, all right, it's his character. So I like all that sort of stuff. I thought that was really cute.
What do you think is the biggest chance she took by creating these three? What do you think when you wrote down when you're watching these three? What do you think was the biggest chance she took?
That's a very interesting question. Like, so I don't think it was a chance, but a thing that really struck me is how gory these films are, and how very definitely R-rated they are. They're also very sweary, and there's also sex in them, and not just heterosexual sex. But these are based on books that were not, they were aimed at teenagers, but they weren't super violent or like totally R-rated. This is more, you know, in the wheelhouse of, like, it's not Goosebumps, it's above Goosebumps, but it's like aimed at a teen audience. And there are lots of films, lots of very good horror films that are not R-rated. But the fact that she decided that, no, this has got to be properly full on gore, violence, kills, swears, sex, could have been a risk. I don't think it was a risk, because what struck me is that the right age actually to be watching R-rated films is when you're a teenager. Like, that's when we all came upon, you know, Halloween and Friday the 13th and Poltergeist and Nightmare on Elm Street, all those films. You know, you don't actually need to be 18 to watch them. It's just, you know, that's the sort of tradition. So I actually think it was a wise move, but I wondered if she might have had any pushback from Netflix, you know, because it is like, this is quite a beloved young adult franchise that's now being turned into, you know, like, although obviously we can see Stranger Things vibes, it isn't really suitable necessarily for the Stranger Things audience.
No, I don't think there's a crossover. Yeah. I think that was something I was concerned about going in, was just seeing the R.L. Stine aspect of it, where I was like, this is going to be a little too over the top, too hokey for me. I don't know if I'm going to be able to buy in. And then you watch it and you're like, oh no, this is gripping. This is it. We're going to have my girlfriend on in a little bit, but that was something she was commenting on, just the goriness and just like the speed of the counselor in part two of his axe killing. Very, very, very efficient in his speed and delivery. Very, very quick. Very good with an axe. It stood out to her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he is a natural. I think he kills like 12 people.
Yeah, he's a natural for sure. If the whole acting thing doesn't work out, he's got another career opportunity in serial killing, I think.
Serial killing, or maybe as a lumberjack.
Lumberjack it too. Are there still lumberjacks? Do those still exist? Are people still out there lumberjacking?
Do you know what? I don't know that Britain really has a big lumberjack. Lumberjack community, so I wouldn't really be the right person, but I like to believe that it's a thriving business.
Well, what's the mall situation like? You've talked about growing up with Scream and going to that, but when you saw them, like, so much of this movie is about, like, not even, I shouldn't say about, is involved and takes place in this mall. that is something I grew up on in the States, and just I worked at a mall in high school and things like that, and just that vibrant community, and just I love situations like that, and you saw that in Stranger Things too. Does that resonate to you and other people across the pond on that front?
Well, so we don't, when these days mm-hmm. we have sort of malls, but we call them shopping centers, mm. which is a bit less glamorous, but it isn't. But certainly that wasn't really, it doesn't have the same cultural significance in this country. We didn't hang around in malls when mm-hmm. we were kids, but we all grew up watching American TV mm-hmm. and American films. And so it's weirdly as familiar. It's synonymous with that kind of era. So even though that wasn't my personal experience, and my personal experience was much more sort of parochial, and it was basically sitting in parks drinking sweaty bottles of White Lightning, which is a cheap cider, basically.
Interesting. Okay, White Lightning.
What, like terrible White Lightning?
You wouldn't recommend it.
I would not. It's a hard part as a grown-up. It's like mm-hmm. why would I do that to myself? But this is what we did in rural parts of England, where we would basically get the oldest looking one of us to go and get a massive bottle of some disgusting cider and go sit in the park and drink it. So, you know, I'm not proud of that. I think I'm digressing slightly here.
But, no, this is interesting. I like this. It brings us all together. When you think about the acting in this series, because there was a lot of moving pieces, and the, like, you wrote about this in part three of, like, not only were they asked to do a lot of different stuff, but also they were asked to change accents for different movies. So how do you think they ultimately fared there? Because that was something you'd written about that kind of it didn't ruin part three for you, but it is something that you took note of.
I mean, so again, I'm not American, and perhaps that accent is I suppose it's supposed to be set in the Chesapeake Bay and in 1666, and obviously I don't exactly know what that sounds like, but I have to say I did find the accents jarring and it's all different to each other. Or is that my ill-educated British ear? I mean, you tell me. Did you think they worked?
So I don't usually get, like, that's not one of those things that will draw me out. It was more sometimes the dialogue will, like, I'm more focused on what they're actually saying, not the way they're saying it. Does that make sense? Where if it's too hokey, like, so a good example of this is Slasher. Have you watched any of that series?
Slasher?
Yes.
I don't think I even know what that is.
Oh, it's another Netflix show. There's like three different parts, but it's right up your alley based on what I know so far about you, Rosie. The dialogue is not good. The dialogue is not good. And the acting is not good. But the action is, it's one of those bad horror shows to watch. And it's good to have on in the background, because that's what normal people do when they're writing and doing other stuff and being productive, is having horror shows in the background. But that is something that draws me out a lot more, of just like, that's not how human beings talk. Like, not actually the accent, but just the back and forth, where I can't. That will lose me quicker than anything else in a TV show, is how they're actually communicating versus the way. Like, I can overlook accents. And I don't know. I was not really that involved in that. Or I shouldn't say involved. I was not really that taken out by that, because I was still in on the actual dialogue and what they were saying.
Yeah, I mean, I did find it jarring, but like I said in the review, like, it didn't ruin it for me, and I thought they were all having a good go, and I thought that, you know, there's so much more to like than there is to criticize. I mean, yeah, the other point that was a little bit jarring is in the 1666 one. We've got these teenagers, these older teens, and we're trying to sort of maintain a sort of a millennial attitude in an era where that wouldn't have been appropriate. So, like, I'm pretty sure 17, 18 year olds in 1666 wouldn't have been getting high on berries and applejack and having a lovely time. Like,
would you have eaten berries? I think I was out. I think I mentioned my girlfriend. I'm doing this. Why are these kids just openly eating these witchcraft filled berries? Like, I'm out on that. I don't think you're going to be able to talk me into it.
I think in 1666, I would have been too busy dying of the plague to be. You know, like, I just don't like, having had a little read around about American colonial history, it sounds like it was pretty tough.
Yeah,
like, pretty hard. But yeah, I mean, would I have eaten the berries in my own contemporary life? Yeah, probably.
Oh, interesting. See, we're learning a lot about each other. Like, I'm not the risk taker. You're the risk taker. I don't know. If someone offers me some witch berries, I'm just like, I think I'll pass. I think I'll stick with my water bottle, actually, because the water well is not looking great. Last time I checked, there was a dead dog in there. So I think I need to be careful here.
Well, that's one of the things I did actually really love about the whole series is the way that its characters were outsiders. But whereas in the traditions of the slasher movie, the lesbian girl, the drug dealing girl, the slightly gender fluid boy who's a bit of a troublemaker, all of those characters get killed. And certainly the black kid. Like, but that isn't what happened here. And these characters are, you know, like Kate and Simon are killed, and they're killed horribly. And you really feel that. You really feel sad for them, because it's like, actually, Kate and Simon were really great characters. And, like, you know, she's had, like, only bad luck in her life, but has managed to massively excel. And we learn that he's just, like, this super nice guy who's been looking after his family since he was 13. Mm-hmm. So I loved that it was kind of kinder to its outsider characters, you know. So while, you know, in 78, it's the jocks and the cheerleaders, and those lot all get offed. In, like, I mean, some of our outsiders do as well. But, like, for example, like, the Alice character in 78 is this obviously troubled, drug-taking, sex-having girl. But we learn that actually she really loved her boyfriend. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm out to get laid. Like, you get that actually that was a proper, genuine, like, meaningful relationship. And these are things that you don't really get in the original sets of slashes that I thought was really fresh and new and, like, you know, handled really well in this.
Yeah. I also think, too, what's really hard to pull off with horror movies is this, like, so Dina, just that it felt genuine. Like, part of this is having multiple hour and a half episodes, essentially, to build this character development and to really latch on. But, like, her happiness at the end of part three is well-deserved. And, like, her smiling is kind of jarring, based on, like, everything we saw before that. And to actually feel good about her future and to see optimism on her face is something that is well received, and something you I was not expecting to just also smile along. I'm just like, oh, that's like the moment where it's like, this is earned, and this is good. She actually is optimistic about her future after just this dismay and this. I mean, Ziggy was going through the same thing, and just this optimism is so well earned, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, in many ways, if you look at the series as a whole, as well as being a horror movie, it's also it's a love story across the ages, basically. And it's sort of in the tradition of things like Carmilla, where you see, you know, it's almost like Sarah and Hannah in 1666 are kind of these lovers who are almost reincarnated as Dina and Sam in 1994. Like, it's like these souls that are supposed to be together, and it's, you know, this has been going on, this curse has been going on for centuries, but it's only the love between those two women that is strong enough to be able to actually break this curse, even though, you know, the Shady Siders have been living with this, you know, for generations and generations. It's her where she's like, no, I'm not going to let this happen to Sam because I love her. And so therefore, you know, it's the strength of that, you know, that's carried on, that's, you know, started in 1666 and carried right forward to 1994, that finally makes it able to be changed. It's kind of like, you know, in a romantic way, it's kind of lovely. It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah, I also jotted down. Would you have gone to this links for Sam, as Deanna did, to your high school sweetheart? Really going, really doing everything possible to keep this relationship going. She really, really went in for the long haul for this high school lover.
I mean, yeah. Would I? No.
No. But, like, that was something the girlfriend and I, we talked about it. I was like, there's no way. Can you imagine high school you going to this link to just keep your partner alive and keep them going and, like, tie them up, and, like, they tried to kill you and now they're possessed, and you're like, well, we still got to keep her around. Just keep her chained up wherever we go and hope for the best. But, yeah, she's worth it. I think we're going to make it for the long haul.
Yeah, well, but that's why I think it's important to understand, like, you're completely right. Nah, of course not. But that's why I suppose it works for me if you understand that this is not just her high school sweetheart. This is a love that has existed through the ages since 1666. So these are souls who are supposed to be together and who are always supposed to be together. And now it's the 90s, like, you know, that kind of transcendental love is carried, you know, is carried forward across all these different eras. And so if you take the super romantic kind of angle, then it's like, yes. If you take the, well, you're teenagers and you're dating, so you'd probably break up in a week anyway, then perhaps not.
Yeah, I have no context for this because I ran the school paper in high school, so not a lot of dating for me during that period of my life. I was more into books and being the nerd on the sidelines for sporting events, taking notes and stuff. So, but my expectation would be that I would not go to this extreme.
I went to an all girls school, which
did you?
Yes, I did. Which produces extremely dysfunctional women. So. Yeah.
So you would not recommend?
I would not recommend. It would be a hard pass. Yeah.
Something else I had thought about. This is how my brain works, Rosie. I don't know if your brain does this too when you're watching something where like, oh, I want a spinoff where I just want Camp Nightwing. So like when they're driving away on the bus, remember the end of part 2 where they're getting the kids out before Nick and Ziggy and everybody go through their end sequence. I would love a part 2 where, or just a spinoff where once because there's no cell phones during this time period. There's no, in the 70s, there's no cell phones about like all the stuff that's happening at this camp. Like what that looks like when they get back home. Just the parents all waiting for their kids. And it's just like, hey, so can't call, no cell phones. Bad news. We only have a third of the kids. <There's->
Yeah, I think that you need like, you know, like with Marvel movies, they have those one shots.
Yeah.
I think you need a little one shot of that, of like a little half an hour segment of like, he did what?
So somebody got possessed. It's a long story. There were some monsters. They chopped up some other, like, we don't even know what really ended up happening. We got away before it got even worse. But yeah, it was, we were playing tag or capture the flag. And it just turned into this whole thing where this guy was axing like a third of the campers. But like, some of them are here, so just we're gonna let them out, and you guys figure out which ones are here. And then if your kids aren't here, they were brutally murdered by one of their camp counselors. But anyway,
Mrs. Slater, I think probably we need to have a little sidebar conversation.
nothing big. Don't freak out. But we just need to have a private conversation just about your son in particular.
Yeah.
Oh man, see, this is what we should be directing the horror movie spinoffs, Rosie. Like, let's just do that, where it's just, we get really meta with this stuff.
I do love all that. I do love the idea of, like, because one of the things about slashers is that, like, so slashers are about survival. Like, people think slashers are about kills, but they're not, they're about survival. And what they're very much not about is grief. And so, like, you know, that's part of the joy of it. You know, you don't really want to, like, you know, if you go through something and like your best friends are killed, you're not getting over that. That's not going to be okay. You're not going to be fine about that. But slashers don't deal with that. And I appreciate slashers for that. But I do quite like the idea of what the actual reality would be. As a slight digression, I was reading this book recently. It's new. It's called The Final Girl Support Group by Grady Hendrix. And he's a favorite author of mine. And that's literally about that. It's about these kind of final girls in the mold of, you know, obviously Laurie Strode and like Heather Langenkamp's character in Nightmare on Elm Street, and basically what happens to them afterwards. And they're all completely messed up, obviously. They're all just completely ruined people. So yeah, quite like the idea of the reality of that.
Yeah. And I would you get bored? Would you get bored if you're Dean after this? Like, wow, I just lived like 19 different lives in my high school years. Like, college is gonna be a breeze. Like, I don't know if I can just like pay attention in philosophy, like intro to philosophy. How do I do that? I don't know how I get back to normalcy and know that like my most exciting years are absolutely behind me, because there's no topping that, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, you know, that's exactly the thing of Final Girl Support Group. It's like, what happens to you if the most significant moment in your life happened when you were 16? Like, how do you deal with that? Like, what is the rest of your life going to look like? So one of them is obviously like a massive addict, which is, you know, probably where I would go, because you just wouldn't be able to cope with it. One of them's like an absolute control freak, because she keeps expected to be killed all the time. Like, you know, how do you get through that? Like, nothing's normal. And also then you become like, you become really famous for not dying. And like, what a thing to be famous for.
It's a really weird thing. I don't know what you do, but I don't know. I'm not really sure. But we now have my girlfriend here. who has some questions for you, Rosie. Samantha, are you there?
Hello, I am.
Okay.
Hello, Rosie. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Oh, I love your accent. You already knew I was going to say that, didn't you?
I did not, but thank you.
So what are we talking about?
We're talking about part one, part two, part three. So what questions do you have for Rosie about? Because we talked about the accents. We talked about the axe throwing that you were really in on.
My gosh. He was so fast. So fast. No nonsense. I loved that. No nonsense killing.
I mean, that beheading was particularly impressive, I thought. Like, you know, single swipe. Straight off.
Absolutely. No, I loved it. If he saw you, you were dead. And that's what I need. I don't like the slow walking Michael Myers. I could get you. I'm probably going to get you. This guy was just, he was there. He meant business. I was all about it. I think I said, he's so fast, just multiple times, because that's how impressed I was. That's the kind of horror that I like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, super efficient.
He was super efficient. So yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Well, which one was your favorite?
Ooh, well, that's a good question. Like, kind of like maybe the third one, but it wouldn't have been if it was a standalone. I was saying to Chase, like, the whole series is more than the sum of its parts. So the third one had some great revelations. It had such a nice mix of things. I really love folk horror in general, so that scratched an itch for me. But then maybe the first one, because the first one actually is probably the most successful as a standalone. And the first one has such a lot of energy and such a lot of heart. I think 78 was my least favorite. I still thought it was great, but that one didn't quite have the energy, I think, for the first and third. How about you?
I told Chase this already, but I really enjoyed the first one because I felt that the soundtrack was so on point in putting me in the 90s. The aesthetic was there. The soundtrack had me into it. I loved the heart, just like you said. And I think they did a good job of building the story. But I am an old school, like, take me back. And please forgive me for not knowing what centuries are. Take me back to Salem days. I love that, where it's just no questions. You're a witch. You're a witch and you're dying. We all believe it. Here comes the pitchforks. So I really liked that portion of it. I also watched a series called Salem and loved every season of that. So that might have swayed me a little bit. But I thought that they did really, really well at having all of the people intermingled into each one and come back. I loved how the dead people kept coming back, especially the Ruby girl with her creepy little rhyme, her little song. That was particularly horrifying for me. I like that.
Ruby Lane would be my first choice of first spin-off. Right. And also, like, can we talk about the revelation at the end where it's the family and he's choosing the people?
Yes.
Well,
this was something we wondered about with the family, because there was the brother who claimed to not know anything, but he was not killed. And the curse was still broken. Why was the curse broken if he was spared?
Well, I guess because he wasn't doing it, because he wasn't the eldest, like, he wasn't the heir. I think it was like the first, I think it had to be the firstborn son. But what I was wondering, well, there are a couple of things. Like, how do people, so why would you choose Ruby Lane as your person? Like, why would you choose a teenage girl? That's such an odd, like, I want the story of how the good, like, Mr. Good, or whatever he was called in that era, it was the 60s, I think, would choose
her.
That's
a good point.
Like,
that's a good point. And I also wonder who was in charge at that point, because I know it was like great, 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 you know, all the way going back. So maybe it was just a teenage vendetta, like someone was just at school and they were like, Ruby is such a bitch. She's the next one to go.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what happened at camp.
yeah, absolutely. Because maybe it was like, I mean, this is pure speculation now, but maybe it was like some, like, maybe the good person at that era was like wanting to date her and she wasn't into it. So he's like, right, well, she can be my.
That's what it was.
Rosie, I also wanted to mention, I think I said this to my girlfriend this morning was that, like, I would love to also, like, when we're talking about the spinoff of going to camp and like, or coming back from camp and greeting the parents with only a bus, a third full. What if we did another spinoff, Rosie, where it's just the moments before Mr. Good or Nick Good knew that his dad was a Satanist who made him walk the devil. Like, I would love that sit down because he's just out there playing with his neighborhood friends and his dad's like, hey, I need you to come in here for a second. So long story short, we made a deal, like our ancestors, the classic making a deal with the devil situation. And you're next, you're the heir. So we need you, no rush. We need you to get on board.
We're going to camp this summer.
We need you to, like, pick which one you don't like, which classmate you're not all in on. If it's the long-haired football player, that's fine. That's fine with us. We just need you to pick somebody because our family's lineage and property and everything depends on it. And the devil, he's kind of like a guy who doesn't have a lot else going on. So we need you to go ahead and keep that thing going. Like, I would love a spinoff on that.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, well, I was just thinking, like, because it did strike me that, like, Nick, when he's a youngster in 78, mm-hmm. he was a really nice kid. And, like,
well,
about that age. And he's, like, super tortured about being the Antichrist. He's, like, really torn up about it. Whereas mm-hmm. Nick just completely nonplussed. He's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm the Tommy Slater then. All right, off we go. Like, really just, and, like, you know, if you're, like, why would you choose that? So, like, if you look at the, body counts in history, they're not all the same. So you have to be a particular type of wanker. To go, you know what? Summer camp. I'm going to do it at summer camp. I'm not going to do it in a place where people can get away. I'm going to do it where there's loads of little kids. And, you know, even though I could do a Ruby Lane and just be like, oh, well, she killed, like, a handful of her mates and they killed herself. But it's like, no. I'm gonna go harder. I'm gonna go home. Summer camp children. Let's go.
Yes.
What go kind of
make or go home? Well, yeah. I have to say, I think he was obsessed with both of the sisters. He just latched onto the weird one. But the other one was, like, dating the guy that became possessed, right? So maybe that was his thing. He was just like, well, I can't have that one. We're definitely gonna make your boyfriend insane. We're gonna go for that.
Yeah, you just sort of think, well, maybe could you not do it on a weekend, though? Not at camp, perhaps, so that not as many people get killed. Like, you know, the guy, I can't remember his name, but the very first one in the mall, there were only 7 people killed then. So, you know, maybe kinder to do it at a mall than to do it in a summer camp full of children.
Also, who won the color war? We never made that clear. Like, who actually won the color war?
Babe, everyone died. No. No one won the color war. They gave up that.
There were no winners that weekend.
Yeah, everyone lost.
Except Nick Good.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of room for this series to grow because a few of the people that came back, I didn't know what they had done. Like, I think I announced the baby killer. I don't think he was actually a baby, and I don't think he killed babies. You know who I'm talking about, right, Chase? With the baseball bat?
Yeah,
and
he's
wearing
one.
Like a baby face helmet, and he's like, or a baby face helmet. Yep, that's what masks are. A baby face helmet. And he's got the baseball bat. What did he do? I want to know his story so bad. Did I miss it? Or?
No, so this is how much of a nerd I am.
Yes.
massive nerd. I wrote an article about the Shady Side Killers. Now, there's not very much information out there, but at the very beginning of the first one, there are these newspaper clips. So there I am, pausing my Netflix, yes. Getting up close to the screen to see what I can read about each of them. And
yes.
What I can tell you about Billy Barker, I think he's called, mm-hmm. is that he was, I think he's, he has some sort of learning difficulty, disability, and some sort of deformity, I think. But was an otherwise nice kid who at one point basically bludgeons to death his brothers and his parents in their beds.
Okay, perfect. Why did we choose him? We're just picking on people now. Just a tiny child. I mean, you talk about camp, but this boy, he sounds perfectly fine.
Well, yeah, but I suppose if you're like, so he's, I can't remember what era he was in, but like he's quite a while ago, but it's almost like, is it an era where people were just horrible, ableist kind of, you know, oh, well, if I'm going to pick someone, then I'm going to pick the disabled kid because he's
right.
collateral rather than, you know, like, if he only kills, well, I say only, but if he only kills his two brothers and his parents, it's like, well, that's four, which is better than the terrible Nick Good decision to make it at some camp and knock off. Yeah, it's quite an interesting one. And like the milkman. The milkman, what's with him?
Well, nobody likes milkmen, okay? We what? Know all the stories about milkmen.
Who doesn't like milkmen? They bring you milk.
Well,
do they? Do, we don't. What?
Do you, I don't know. I think I'm out on milkmen. There is a like ice cream man, milkman. I don't like any of them. Like, let's move on from all of them. I think.
What is wrong with
they
you?
Do need a murder ice cream truck driver. That's what's next. They need that.
Well, that already happened. That was season one of Dexter was the ice cream truck killer.
That's not here, though. That's not this universe. I need it in this universe, and I need for the truck. It goes real slow, and the song goes even slower, and then it skips sometimes.
I think you're really skirting into vilifying people who work in the dairy industry here. I don't know.
Well, I'm lactose intolerant, I've decided. So you're right. It's fresh. It's a fresh wound for me, and that's it. I'm going for them.
I see. I knew there was something.
Rosie,
Rosie?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, when you were talking about, like, the day that you sit your son down and you're like, hey, I hate to say this, but, you know, look all around. You see all this? There's a reason why we're super rich and loaded. So you have to keep doing this stuff. Have you seen the movie? I think it's called Hide and Seek. Has anyone seen this movie?
Is it an old movie?
It's been pretty recent. It's not super great. It's one of those that you put on and you watch it and you go, and then you turn it off and you never think about it until this conversation. But they kind of have the same premise where the guy, when you marry into the family, you have to sit down at this ancient table and like choose a card of a game to play. And choose a card that's just like no game at all. But if you choose one, you've got to play it. And if you make it through the night without getting murdered by the family that you just married into, I think the whole family dies. Like you get to live, but the whole family dies. So they basically want to murder you.
So that movie.
Has no one seen it?
Yes, I've seen it. It's not called Hide and Seek. It's called Ready or Not.
Maybe, yes, yeah. So you did see it.
I did see it, yes. It's called Ready or Not. It's got Samara Weaving in lead. And
love her.
I thought it was great. And the ending of that movie is brilliant. I don't want to spoil in case people haven't seen it, but that ending is just so bonkers.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But that is what reminded me of that, because basically that's kind of how the movie starts. You're just like, we're loaded. Like, we're unbelievably rich, but sometimes we gotta kill people. That's, you know, natural. That's just what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would recommend that. That's a cracker.
That's a good one.
We have taken too much of your time this afternoon, or this evening in London, rather. So I would like to wrap up here with what can we check out from you across Den of Geek, or anything else you would like to plug as we wrap up this bonus episode of the podcast?
Den of Geek mostly. Lots of things I'm covering at the minute. Fear Street, a lot of that. We have I'm working on our next Den of Geek print magazine, because I am also in charge of print at Den of Geek, and I'm a massive, massive print nerd. I was working in magazines for years, and I loved it. So digital is great. Magazines are also great. So yeah, if you come to Den of Geek, you can check out the beautiful print products, which you can subscribe to, I think, for free. Head over to denofgeek.com. There'll be lots of me and my fabulous colleagues banging on about nerdy things.
But also read your reviews in Den of Geek. They were great, so I appreciate that. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for taking the time today, Rosie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. When you said it will be 10 to 20 minutes, I thought, ha, 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 yeah, you'll be lucky, mate. It's not going to be 10 to 20 minutes. I've met me.
No, this is great. I'm very happy that this worked out. So thank you so much, Rosie. We'll have to do this again when they do the spinoffs or any other kind of horror movies that come out.
Yeah, 100%. Nice to meet you both.
Thank you, Rosie.
Thank you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.